Welcome back to the Dungeon Master's Block, the place where we come to talk about the Dungeon Master, the most important person in the game. With every conversation, we hope to inspire as many as possible to keep on Dungeon Mastering.
And I'm one of your hosts, DM Neil, aka Jote Maniac. And today, we have two absolute amazing people back for the podcast. You've heard him once, you've heard him twice, you'll hear him again. We have Celeste Conowich and Jeremy Cobb, aka DM Seawitch and DM. You'll have to listen until the very end of the episode where we figure out what Jeremy's aka actually is. But patrons, if you are supporting us at any tier, you just got access to the Pack Lord, a beefed out Displacer Beast alternative that could be the BBEG, could be the head of an entire pride of Displacer Beast. I wonder if that's what we would want to call it. Dear listener, if you have an idea of what to call a group of Displacer Beasts, hit us up on any social media or email us or wherever you want to find us. And do that. And next up, we're going to have another episode of our actual play, Player Agency, show up on the feed very soon. But that's enough of me running my mouth. So with that, let's head to the meat.
I'm starving. We ain't had nothing but maggoty bread for 3 stinking days.
Yeah. Why can't we have some meat?
The plate meat back on the menu, boys.
So today on the meat, I have two people that we could talk for hours if we didn't hit record, and we tried to, believe you me. But it's me, DM Neil, a.k.a. Jote Maniac, but today I am not alone. Okay, both of you roll a die, and then whoever gets the higher number introduces themselves first.
You mean we're rolling for initiative?
Oh, my goodness.
I rolled a 6.
I got a 7.
This feels about right for initiative. Perfect. Oh, yeah. Behind the curve. Loving it.
So with your 7.
I would like to hold my action.
Perfect.
Until after Celeste introduces.
But you still go in initiative order right now.
The triggering thing for me to my action will be to introduce myself. And I would like to hold that action until after you introduce yourself.
Good. Okay. I love this.
Oh,
okay,
how great. Awkward would it be if Celeste is like, no, I do not do that. Therefore, the trigger does not happen.
And it's I just lose my action.
The trigger never happens. You lose your whole turn. All right, fine. I'll do it. Hey, everybody. My name is Celeste Conowich. I'm usually in the gym, but I've broken out of the gym. I've broken free, and I've come here into the main episode. So, hey, again, that's Celeste. Oh, wait, DM, God, I can't do it now. It's all different. DM Seawitch, that's me.
and that triggers my held action to introduce myself. Hello, I'm Jeremy Cobb. You probably have heard me before because I've been on here a few times. I don't think I have a fancy, fun DM name. Should I create one?
You should create one, but the fancy thing that we can reiterate, because we are trying to make Fetch happen, is that for any listener that is a fan of the DM's Block, as well as 3 Black Halflings, you are affectionately referred to as Blocklings.
It's true. Moving forward.
Oh, that's a good name.
Okay. It has to be something that's DM focused. So I'm trying to, Jerem, no, DM, DM-y, no, that doesn't work. Cobb, I feel like Cobb doesn't really fit. we'll workshop it.
We will, but because it's been a little while, the fun question that I get to ask is really: is there anything interesting that either of you have been working on that you think our listeners would want to hear about?
This time, I'm actually going to go ahead and take my turn, not hold my action. So. Lately, 3BH has been really pumping up our Patreon, 3BH meaning 3 Black Halflings, has been pumping up our Patreon. I've been recording a lot of solo pods. In fact, all of us have been recording just solo pods where it's just us talking by ourselves about a topic that is interesting to us and hopefully also to you. And so one of the things that I've been doing recently is going through just kind of a summary of all of the most interesting and or horrifying aspects of the Animorphs series, which was...
Whoa, that's good. Yeah. Fodder. What a mine.
I really, really enjoyed that series when I was a kid. And it, upon revisiting it now, it is insane that that was for children. Like, some of the stuff that happened in that series, it is beyond, like, ugh.
Classic 90s media. Yeah. That.
Like,
yeah, absolutely.
It is three edgy five me for sure. Can I say one of the notable things that was like, just how on earth did they put this in a book, or should I not say?
I'd be disappointed if you didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, please do.
There was a book where in the logic of in the world of Animorphs, the morphing power comes from a blue box called the Escafil device. And there was a book where they had misplaced, the Animorphs had misplaced the Escafil device, and a cape buffalo and an ant came into contact with it and gained the power of morphing, which meant that if they came into contact with another living being, they could acquire that being's DNA and then morph into them. And the reason the Animorphs discovered this is because the Cape Buffalo started to morph into their assistant principal, who was part of their assistant principal was on the side of the bad guys secretly. And when you transform into an animal, unlike in D&D, which actually was a polymorph, you maintain your own brain, but also gain the animal's consciousness. So a Cape Buffalo gained human sapience and started like trying to speak. And like its entire perspective of like it basically started to have a complete existential crisis. But the worst part was when an ant accidentally acquired one of the Animorphs and started morphing into her. And there was a half ant, half her, that when it gained human sapience, started just screaming in horror because it's an ant. And like, it was not in the Animorphs continuity. Ants are just a hive mind that are controlled by their queen. So this ant, for the first time, was aware of itself as an individual.
Was alone?
It started screaming with her voice. But it's like a half ant her. And there's like a whole scene where she starts screaming. And then the ant sees her and starts attacking her with its mandibles, like half giant mandible things that are like, it keeps half morphing, half demorphing. It ends up getting killed by the Cape Buffalo, who at this point has gained enough intelligence to recognize her as like a friend. Rather it gets seriously injured. And then she sees herself being seriously injured, which is another like disturbing thing. It then demorphs. She in a panic just stomps the ant to death once it demorphs. And then the Cape Buffalo is destroyed by laser beams. This was one book out of 54.
This was
children's literature. That got dark. Everybody.
That got dark.
That's what I'm saying.
It is.
Yeah.
They wouldn't put this in most adult sci-fi. This is unbelievable.
And it's at a reading level of like, you're not in junior high. Like, I think it's like.
Yeah, no, you're like 12. Yeah.
This was written for like pre-pubescent / early pubescent kids.
Footloose and fancy free.
Deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Checks and balances. Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That was some initiative that author took, making that horrible.
Yeah. So anyway, if you want to hear me talk about that, or just one other thing I'm talking about, which is significantly, well, depending if you're a Spider-Man fan, maybe more horrifying, I will be giving summaries of the two most infamous Spider-Man storylines of all time, the Clone Saga and One More Day. If you are a Spider-Man fan, may be more horrifying than what I just described. But I have, in preparation for this, started reading all of the Clone Saga. And I'm going to also subject myself to reading One More Day. And then I'm going to record pods of me describing them so you don't have to read them.
Thank you.
Yeah. So join the 3D Black Things Patreon for more of this goodness.
Perfect. Celeste, what about you?
My God, how do I follow that up? Okay, today, actually, I guess, so I work for Kobold Press, and we just announced that Kobold Con, our first ever, like, our first year of our starting an annual event that'll be a virtual convention that Kobold Press throws every year. So we just got that announcement, so I've been working, you know, with the team to, like, film some cool stuff and, you know, prep some like really awesome content, run some games, you know, showing off Tales of the Valiant, which is our brand new, you know, game system. That's going to be happening May 10th through 12th, 2024, just in case you're listening to this, you know, in a couple years. Check it out again because it should be happening every year. So that's been very exciting.
Awesome. Yeah. You've definitely been writing many, many Tales of the Valiant.
Oh, yes. you know, finishing the shipping off those Game Master guides for said system and working on all our other cool projects.
Yeah. It must just be a wild time over at Cobalt Press.
It is. It's very exciting. I mean, designing a new game and like getting a core system as a company, you know, making that jump from a third party publisher to a first party is so thrilling and so hard and so exciting. And it's a lot, but good stuff.
Awesome. Okay, surprise question. Do either of you, and I will answer this for myself, have a particular die that you go to roll for initiative? Like, you've got that one.
Oh, I don't.
Is an acceptable answer.
No.
Totally. But,
yeah.
Okay.
I will.
No. Well, I do have, like, when I play at my house, like, when I play over Zoom, I always have this one set of dice because I don't care so much about them because I'm constantly throwing them across the room, you know, and they get lost. But that's not really, like, a special initiative die.
I'm in a similar boat where I will just use a specific set of dice for a given character or campaign.
So I'm much the same. For a while, I had like the same set that I would always use. Now, that said, I brought that up because I have a player that has been using like the same one to roll, that it is at the point where it like doesn't stop rolling as much. Because it's
worn down,
old school. Like, the first ones were made with more of a clay like material than the resin that we moved to. And, you know, the oldest versions, you were two sets of 10, where you basically forced crayon into one set of 10 to denote.
I remember my gem cut. Uh-huh.
And then, so it just has like this, it's more of a sphere than it is necessarily any other shape. No. So yeah, okay. There we go. And as you can guess, dear listener, we are going to be talking about initiative from start to finish. We've been making initiative puns. But one of the thing is, and I did way too much research and I don't enjoy what I found, but
oh dear.
How has initiative worked in previous editions? It is wild. Absolute absurdity. So I will quickly run through some of the previous methods. Either side just rolling a d6. And if you both roll the same, everything happens simultaneously. Not weird at all. So the original rules actually didn't have anything for initiative. You were just forced to look back into the chainmail and pull that forward. But that's battles. And literally the reference it says is you have 9 players with 7 henchmen going against like umpteen giants and their 7 wargs. I'm like, yeah. Surprise. We're not going to individually roll for that scenario. Mm. But you're rolling a d6. So the idea of simultaneous turns happening all the time. But not only that, you would then, if you went first, you would resolve missiles or airborne things prior to then resolving your melee. And then the other side would go.
Because the war game stuff, like that's how you would always do the volley of archers before your cavalry went in or then your foot soldiers, right?
Yeah. Oh, so you would basically have to resolve it that way. And then from there, you're rolling D6. At one point, we moved to a D10, maybe so that we have a little bit less.
A little more.
A little bit less simultaneous crossovers. And in the other editions also start to layer in, what are you doing? So are you doing melee or are you casting a spell? But remember back, you could cast a spell but not move. So then you're able to cast a spell early because you weren't actually moving, but because you needed to do all your hand motions and your spell components and things like that. Then it's a weapon speed. What weapon are you using? Mm-hmm. Oh, that actually has a speed. So then you get to go first because based on your weapon speed. And then, but your weapon is actually fast enough, so you don't get to go once, you get to go multiple times during the round because your speed is fast enough that basically, like, I fire off that first arrow, then I can fire off that second one, or I've got a giant two-handed sword, so I'm going to go last, but I'm going to, you know, do a lot more damage because I'm wielding a larger sword.
Whoa.
Uh-huh.
So, and then in 3.5, you have feats that replicate all of that in very weird ways.
So did they have initiative modifiers at that point?
There are times at which like your dexterity is the touch point. And then if you basically your dexterity is first, and then if you tie at your dexterity, then you would do a roll off. So dexterity modifier, but direct initiative modifiers, no, does not happen until third edition. There is nothing to denote your speed when it came to initiative.
Mm.
Not even a box on the character sheet until third edition.
Wow.
I mean, you would potentially use the dex, especially to determine if one person was faster than another, but typically that's it was to break ties rather than just statically say you are faster, so you get to go first.
So by making dexterity the foundation of initiative, dexterity basically got a buff in fifth edition as a skill.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that's like one of the big, you know, people point to problems in fifth edition. It's great, but wow, dexterity has become the master score because of all the things now it's factored into, including initiative.
Which is the same reason why con rarely gets a touch, because you run away from it, because the second I say, yes, con does this, but it's like, yeah, but it already made me live longer, just baseline. Yeah. Or do concentration checks. So the second you buff that, it's like you're basically triple, quadruple buffing that stat. So yeah,
you're over centralizing like the skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm faster. Well, yeah, dexterity. I'm faster. I need less armor because I have a bit higher AC.
I need less armor. I'm faster. Yeah, it's a lot. Now it's tied to ranged weapons, and it wasn't as tied to ranged weapon. I think damage was only determined by strength, even for ranged weapons in earlier editions.
Like, you can pull the bow back further because you're stronger, basically?
Right. Yeah, your dexterity would help for your 2 attack modifier, but it would be your strength for damage because it is pulling back. So you can aim it better if you have high dexterity, but your how strong you are still determines the damage in earlier editions.
Even with crossbows?
Yeah, with them all. All weapons.
Interesting. Yeah. It does make sense with some of them. Like, one thing that I have heard from actual people who do archery is that strength should be much more of a factor when it comes to bows and things like that.
You have to be so strong, especially thinking, like, those long bows. Like, those things are huge. And the draw weight, you just need to, like, pull that back.
Yeah. Apparently, we can tell who were archers historically when we look at their skeletons because their wrists will have... Basically, the wrists will be abnormally thick, like their bones, because essentially it's similar to like they get a bunch of microfractures from drawing back the so they just build up really thick, powerful wrists as a result of having all these very tiny injuries from pulling back the immense weight of the bow.
So that leads us to fifth edition, where you just roll a d20. Second edition, sorry. Also, it's the lower roll that would go. And so you would start which everything was better. Everything was a little reverse on second edition. Armor class would go down to the negatives. And if you rolled a 1 on your initiative, you were the first person to go and you would subsequently go from there.
Interesting.
And then there's that second edition is also where I was taught how to with a faster weapon I could have multiple turns. So there's different iterations even that come out of second edition directly. But right now, it's dexterity plus whatever you rolled on the d20.
Yeah.
And certainly you can add feats, but the basic concept is that. So are there any alternate... We just jump right in. Are there any alternate methods that either of you use? And we could start... And I've got a few that we could start talking about. Either... And it doesn't have to be from D&D. That's the best thing about initiative is I think it's one of the few pieces that is really, really easy to just completely forklift something else not really impact almost any other aspect of the game. It just, if it works better for you, it works better for your table. If it works better for a setting, for an actual play, because certain things need to just be faster.
Just happen faster. Yeah, for sure. I've definitely started, I know for my, because for Venture Made Inside, an actual play podcast I do, I've actually, if I know there's a fight coming, before we even start recording, I pre-roll initiative. Like I have everybody roll their stuff. And now what I'm doing too as well is I've just stopped rolling initiative for monsters altogether and I just use their dexterity score. That's just where they go. So like if they have a 13 dex, that's what it is. Okay. They go on count 13.
I didn't feel like I was going to interrupt this quickly, but I'm going to interrupt immediately. Thanks. Thanks, Nest. You set me up for it.
All right. All right. Get in there,
in
buddy.
In chapter 9, Dungeon Master's Workshop, in the actual Dungeon Master's Guide that nobody tends to read, I'm just throwing that out there. That shade is directly on me. Don't, if you feel the shade, feel it on me as well. The first initiative variant that is listed is the initiative score, which basically creates a passive initiative that everybody gets. 10 plus your dexterity modifier, done and done. No questions. Also, one of the previous editions, because of how cobbled things were together, this is my favorite piece. I can't believe I didn't mention it before, was if you don't know, just roll. Like, if the monster is there and you're not sure what their dexterity is, roll for their dexterity on the spot. I was just like, it was basically like, this orc is real fast.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just wild to me that one, I wouldn't have that readily available information. And two, I would just throw some dice at it and be like, yeah, this one's super fast. The last one was really slow. This dragon got a 3. Don't worry about it.
Mm. Celeste, I'm curious then, because it sounds the system that you're using for the monsters where you're just like, I just use the, wouldn't that, like, if you're using just their dexterity score, the overwhelming majority of monsters have dexterity scores above 10. So wouldn't that mean that in general, monsters are more likely to have higher initiatives than players? Because a player could theoretically roll a 1 on initiative, and if they only have like a +1 or +2, you know, they're hopelessly far from ever beating a monster at that point.
Yeah, I think the bell curve, in general, it pretty much doesn't matter when it actually comes out in the wash, because especially in 5th edition, where, you know, the minute you hit 5th level, like, your power doubles infinitely as player characters. So it's extremely rare for PCs 5th level or above to get anything lower than 10 on initiative. And what's nice about the monsters is, like, while you do have those, like, set numbers, most of the time, monster dexterity scores aren't actually as high as, like, strength or constitution, because those are the two scores, like, you really rely on to, like, get the damage and survive a fight. So most monsters actually end up in that kind of 13 average, which places them sort of nicely in the middle. So when you do have PCs that have that random element, it actually ends up stacking out pretty nicely, you know, most of the time. So I would say, like, for maybe it's rough at, like, first or second level. And at that point, I might even go in and just, you know, say, okay, it says a 13 on this dexterity score, but, like, there's 20 of these goblins. And so some of them are 5 and some of them are 10 and some are 15. And that's how we're doing this. But I think most of the time you'd be pretty surprised how well it actually works out for the player characters.
Oh, wow.
And it's nice. I don't even do the business, like, in the Game Master Guide, it says 10 and then add their dexterity. I literally just pull. So if a monster is really slow and it has a negative, you know, like, 2, whatever. So its score is 8. So it goes on 8, right? I don't even do the math. That's just where it goes in the order.
Yeah. I mean, I think your version, though, on average would give monsters higher initiative, like, because you're less likely to have, like, a minus something. Like, if you know what I mean? If you have, like, a -2, then I guess, yeah, it would still be an 8. But if it's, like, a 13 is better than an 11, which is what you'd get with the other method. Like, because a 13 is a +1. So, I would imagine that it's slightly better than, in terms of giving them initiative, slightly higher initiative scores.
But consider, for players, because they are randomly rolling, the average roll you get on a d20 is actually, it's 10.5, so it's 11. So that means most players, even if they have nothing in dexterity, are getting an 11 or higher. And most people, because dexterity is such a good score, stack it to hell. Even people who don't traditionally need it usually invest something in dexterity to get those modifiers up for their AC.
And then whoever puts that extra into alert or anything like that.
Yeah.
Jeremy, any alternate methods you've used?
I share the pre-rolling initiative with Celeste. I do that for monsters specifically. I don't usually do it for the PCs, but because that I feel like there can be some fun there and being like in the moment, being like roll for initiative, especially if it's a show. Everybody goes, oh boy, and you know it's not too bad as long as you only have a few people to be like to go through the initiative scores really quickly, as long as you already have all of the monster stuff rolled. And the other thing, let's see, another thing that I'll do, because the big thing with initiative is if you have a very clear main bad guy who must be stopped, and that main bad guy happens to roll like trash on initiative, you could end up with a situation where all 4 to 6 plus of your PCs and their allies all get a chance to just completely unload.
And yeah, it's murder. And game
by
over.
The time your dude gets a turn, he's already been critted on like twice. He's been hit for 100 plus damage. Maybe if he has like legendary actions, he's gotten to do some stuff, but usually legendary actions are balanced in such a way that if you have something that's genuinely really good, that uses like all of them, like maybe you have a movement after that, but you can basically, they just tear through your poor encounter. And your big bad is like, yeah. So one thing I will do is if I pre-roll initiative, I won't necessarily assign numbers as I go. I'll just do it like, who do I want to go early in this fight? Do I want the main bad guy to go relatively early in the fight so that they can have a chance to get some stuff off and make this more of a combat? Like, if they can put the players on the back foot early on, you know, that's something that I do definitely with initiative. I am intrigued, though, by the possibility of just saying, look, we just take the values as they are.
That works great for bosses because they usually have those great scores. So you're already like set to go. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're trading the complexity and the time for kind of a known quantity, because then at that point, yes. Like, especially from your player side, it's the same unless level up and getting magic items or taking a feat and certainly things like that. But then that's a singular change every several levels or something along those lines. So then becomes kind of known what their initiative order will be, which can certainly speed up play.
Yeah. It's also kind of nice, too, because now that my players have started to, like, realize that's what's happening, they can actually rely on the descriptions in-game to kind of trust that a little bit more. So if they're fighting a massive, like, gargantuan dragon who's, like, fat and powerful and, like, takes up a whole, you know, city block, they know that thing is going to be slow. So they can kind of plan that, right? Because it works with the logic of the game. Because it is going to be slower. Its dex ability score is absolutely lower because it is so large and has a hard time moving. But they know it's going to hit real hard when it gets up there. So they can kind of strategize in the theme of the game and feel like enhance the fantasy of it.
And you know, I want to throw out as well, the idea of using those set initiative scores actually boosts the power of the initiative score, because
I guess this
doesn't happen as often for you, Celeste, but in a lot of the games that I run, folks just roll like trash on initiative. So even if they have like a +2 to +4, you'll have people rolling 4s, 5s, 6s. And it's like, Well, I guess you're going at initiative 7. Like I'll usually have quite a big spread. So you'll have some people who are like around 20, some people who are around the 15 range, a couple people around the 10 range, and then some people who are like, yeah, I have a +5 to my initiative score, but I rolled a 2. So I'm down here.
Right. And see, and that's a bummer, right? Yeah. But it definitely gives you more weight for those players who do invest in the options, right? That can increase it. Yeah.
Because now it's like, oh, I have a 20 in dexterity. I automatically go like first, unless somebody got the alert feed or something. I would say the only difficulty is when you have a class ability, because there are class abilities like the barbarian. I think at like level 7 or something, they get advantage on initiative. So I guess you just have to use that as like a set bump to their initiative score.
Oh, so the player character. So in my model, the player characters always roll their initiative, but the monsters never do. The monsters are always at the set values.
Yeah, the model I was describing was that everyone doesn't. And 5th edition sees advantage or disadvantage as a +/-5. So that's what 5. I would do in that scenario.
That's what the math kind of works out to me.
The other one the other thing I was going to say is that we've started talking about it enough that I realized that all the tech work that I've done, what we're doing is called universal design. Because while it does help the speed of play and helps with long-term people having a different way to approach it, everything we've talked about also really helps people that are beginners. Because they're not having the same, that constant math just to jump out and like, where do I go? Okay, you went, but then I go, but then the person over there goes. Because the other one I saw when I was doing some research was highest person goes first, go clockwise. Done.
Whoa.
Highest roll, because then now everybody at the table knows exactly what the initiative order is, because the person to your left or right, depending on which way you want to go, is going to go next. The other thing that I would couple that with, though, and this happened in earlier editions as well, is rolling initiative for every turn. or every round, sorry. Yeah. So then when the round is completed, you re-roll your initiative because, you know, the combat is varied and things happen. Oh, but
it just takes so long.
It does. But if you're also saying the highest roll is the person and then you just run off of that.
Yeah, and if you have if everybody has it set, then that makes it really easy to do. Yeah. Yeah.
I actually, on your point, Celeste, about how long combats can sometimes feel, and even the idea that, like, rolling for initiative can slow down the pacing, I think two things that I want to mention is it's important to recognize that for both you and I, Celeste, and I would imagine you as well, Neil, sometimes, a lot of the times that we're DMing, we're actually doing it for an audience. And a pacing,
so it's gotta be
exactly pacing for a show is very different than pacing at a table where people are eating snacks, people are getting up and going to the bathroom. Like, people are just, it's fine to have like initiative takes 5 minutes to roll because, you know, it's like, okay, everybody's gonna go to the bathroom, everybody's gonna go ahead and get some more snacks, get some more tea, get more this.
I would argue no, though, because I also run a lot of stuff in person, and boy, is it hard just to get my players to remember that one initiative order when they're going and have them ready for that turn, right? So if it changed every turn, I feel like it'd be like, who's going? Like, the constant, like, we're uncertain. At least on one initiative, you can write it on a big whiteboard, and no matter how many beers people have had, they have that point to, you know, reference and, like, come back to.
See, I don't even tell initiative usually. I don't actually usually keep a thing that's like, all right, everybody, here's the order. Like, I usually just write it down myself, and then if I feel like I need to speed things along, I'll give people heads up on somebody else's turn. I'll say, hey, you're next. And sometimes other people will write down the turn order as we go. But I usually just write it down myself and figure out, like, if it matters to them, they'll record it themselves. But the other thing I wanted to mention is there is a guy, I don't remember his name, but he's been running the same D&D campaign for like over 30 years. And he's been playing, I think he said he has not gone in all of that time more than like 3 weeks in a row without playing. So they have, at this point,
legend.
Yeah, they've played hundreds of sessions. And he says that for combat, I think he's out also, like, updated according to the edition as well, like, as he's gone. But he's created his own approach where, like, when it's somebody's turn, you have, like, 30 seconds. He's like, the way he does it is, on your turn, it's like, I think it's everybody stands up at the beginning of initiative, and then you sit down when after you say your turn, or it's like you stand on your turn, but you basically have 30 seconds to say, this is what I'm doing, and if you don't get it all out in that time, like, what your plan is, what your intention is, then you don't get to do it. So he's like, in order to keep things fast, you have to have your idea. You can't just stand there like, I don't know, Now, to be fair, he is also much, like, from what I've seen, he's much more of the school that is not, like, I sit there and describe what you did for 45 seconds.
Brutal.
Yeah, it's just like
hack and slash school.
Exactly. Yeah. And my understanding is even he'll go out of his way. He'll say, like, because the world has been going on for hundreds of years in world, he goes out of his way sometimes. If somebody's had a character who's been around for too long, he'll go out of his way to try and kill their character and make them have a new one.
It's like meat grinder play.
Yeah, he's much more old school in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you also think, like, and that's like that transition into those earlier examples was 9 players with 7 henchmen. Everything needed to be fast because that's 16 people, 16 characters that we're managing just from the side of not the monsters. And so, like, everything needed to be at a different speed. That's also why one of the second variant in the DMG is side initiative. So this side goes first, that side goes second. That's just how it is. And then that even harkens back to the older method of, okay, we both roll a d6, whichever side goes first, and then we're resolving if there's a tie or things are happening simultaneously. That's to say, your wizard could get cut down by the goblins that also then fall asleep on that same turn, rather than the wizard gets cut down, goblins don't fall asleep. Both would simultaneously happen.
Before we move on, there's one other thing I wanted to shout out, which is the new popular version of D&D, which is Baldur's Gate 3, because they, I believe, use a D4 for initiative in that game, which I think, like, I think it's like they automatically roll initiative for you, but it's always a D4, which I think empowers the initiative modifier even more, because, like, if you have a +5, like, you literally can't get behind somebody who has a +0. Like, you always beat them. So
It's at least it's a D4 or a D6 at most, because now that you mention it, I've never seen like an initiative score higher that I rarely, if ever, have seen a double digit for initiative when it all flies out. You know, all the numbers pop up and then you're in combat. But yeah, I don't think I've ever really seen anything above 10.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's it's totally. Yeah. Just looked at the design mod. It's a D4 plus dexterity modifier. Wow. That's so I'd never noticed that before.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're all being, this is not a thing that we've brought up yet. If we're all being honest, if everyone rolls like trash, it doesn't matter. If everyone rolls super high, it doesn't matter because everyone's either at the top of the initiative or the bottom of the initiative.
Exactly.
And you're all lumped together anyways, because everyone could roll, you know, everyone could roll 20 and then the monster rolled a 2. And that's no different than if the monster rolled a 17.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
Unless, of course, we use the third variant in the that's not the third variant. There's one that I stumbled onto where basically you have all your initiative rolls, and then you take that initiative and you subtract 10. If you have not hit 0, you get to go again.
Whoa,
interesting. Okay.
So then, in theory, if you're boosting and rolling super well, you could potentially go 3 times in a round. Let's say I got a 22. So I'm going to go at 22, I'm going to go at 12, and I'm going to go at 2.
That's very powerful. Seems,
yeah, that seems really unbalanced towards, you know, your rogues and your... So. Yeah.
Three sneak attacks? And like, and if you get to sneak attack as a reaction, 4 sneak attacks? Or if you're a fighter,
and
you
could be
hitting 5. For 12 times? And then
I thought you were still talking rogue, because we could do the Battlemaster Fighter to give me Commander Strike. Then you could do the...
Oh, you're talking those multi-class builds?
Yeah.
No, just having someone else in the party be a fighter.
Coffee lock, live forever! Yeah, no,
yeah, haste. You do haste, and you're getting presumably 2 actions per turn. So you're attacking... if you were a fighter, like a level 17 fighter, you'd be attacking, what, 24 times without action surging?
Woof.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's the best method, simply one that I've seen. Now, one that I will say that we've had this conversation, I'm really, really strongly leaning towards using for boss battles is pulling it from Phoenix Dawn Command. So Phoenix Dawn Command is it's a deck builder for your character. You can always do something because you always have cards in hand. But basically, initiative is based on the score that the monster has. And so if the initiative score, the lower it is, the harder the monster is going to be. Because if they have an initiative score of 2, it means they go, 2 players go, and they go again.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so then it scales really well, regardless of how many players you have in that system. Yeah. Because then the monster is always going at the same pace. And either, let's say if it's the 3 of us, it would go, 2 of us would go, it would go. One of us would go, and basically now the round is resetting. And that's the other thing is there's player spots, not necessarily player initiative order. So you could basically, in the scenario I've presented, there's the 3 of us, it has an initiative of 2. I could go to end the round, and then I could go to start the round.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause the players get to decide. Ah, that's cool.
Start the subsequent round, and then the monster would go. The other 2 would go, the monster would go. You just rinse and repeat based on that. And I think, no, I do not think this works well if there's a bunch of monsters and the players. I think it would work really well and give that sense of this is a really tough thing to battle, even though it is by itself. Also, then we don't get the whole, I went, hope I live, because, oh, cool, all of you went and crit and I died a terrible death. But yeah, that back and forth.
That reminds me of, I've been on an actual play, I guested on it, it was actually TK Johnson, it was like a Ravenloft kind of themed game, and they used a system called Popcorn Initiative, which was actually the players decide who goes in initiative, right? So like they can say, oh, okay, we're naming the player who goes, like who wants to go, or they can choose for the monsters to go. And the thing is, if you don't, like, if the monsters go last on the turn, they would actually get to immediately start the next round. So it would be hitting you double at the same time. So that's the penalty. So sometimes strategically it made way more sense to like pick the monster to go at certain moments, like in the story. So I thought that was a cool like narrative device and really allowed for some interesting like team building stuff. Like people could do combos more effectively. It definitely took a little bit more time, but I thought that was like a really interesting way. I haven't seen it done before.
That is very interesting. I feel like for me, the thing with combat has rarely though been initiative itself. And the thing that is often the most challenging is often keeping, I think for some people, it is very difficult to keep track of all of the turns because there are just so many variables present, especially if you're running. I mean, that's partly why it's like people will lump monsters. Like if there's a mob, they'll lump monsters onto the same initiative. But I think for some people, I don't know if he still runs stuff this way, but I remember back when I used to play in my 3BH colleague Jasper's games, he had a much easier time running combats with very few bad guys, which unfortunately meant that we would swarm the main one and it would just be, and he's also like a rule of cool guy. Yep. So if I can come up with something cool enough, he will let me just cheese his bad guy. And I felt bad for him because it would be like, here's an undead zombie beholder. And we're like, cool, I want to stab a dagger into it and the bard's going to cast a third level heat metal.
Yep.
And it's just stuck in him now. And he can't get away from the damage because he has no arms. He just has a knife in him now. And Jasper would be like, oh, great. And his poor guy just gets roasted. But it's like, I know there are systems that eschew like initiative and sort of turn order entirely. Like I've been looking at the new game that is getting kickstarted right now as of this recording by Son of Oak Studios, which is...
Legends in the Mist. We had a meet on recently. Yeah, it would have released before this, so that holds true.
In my head, cool. I was like,
yes, we also talked about it because the other thing with that one is differing power levels. So that's the conversation we had him on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and with that game, as far as I can tell, not only do you not roll initiative, but the bad guys don't really have turns per se. It's like it goes entirely off of the player's choices. So the players will do something and then the bad guys will do something in response rather than like the bad guys may put the players in a situation where it's now their choice, but you don't really have an initiative thing. And it's the bad guys don't really necessarily roll. It's entirely driven by the players rolling. At least I think it's what it is for City in the Mist, but I could be wrong. But I think for both City and Legend in the Mist, it's the bad guys like basically never roll. And it's just a matter of do the players succeed on what they're trying to do? And if they don't, this happens as a consequence. And maybe I roll for how much damage they take, but that's about it. But I could be wrong about that. But I think I'm correct.
If we're talking about other games, I got a chance to, it was at PAX Unplugged, I got a chance to finally play like Dragonbane. And they had a really interesting initiative system where, like, so no characters actually have, like, an initiative score or anything, neither do the monsters, but every game comes with a deck of cards labeled 1 to 10, and then you shuffle them and you draw them, like, and that's the order you go in, right? So whoever gets the one, whoever's the first number, you go, da da da, and you go through and you just resolve it that turn. But what's nice is, like, all the martial classes, so, you know, your fighter-adjacent classes and stuff, they had abilities that would allow them to trade the cards with other, like, players. Wow. So essentially, right, like, so you all draw the cards, but all the fighters had some sort of way that they could go, hi, wizard, like, do you want to trade initiative cards with me? So I will go first so I can move in there and be in front, right? And then, like, wizard would be like, yes, I would love to go stand in the back, go last, not pull aggro, thank you. I thought that was a really, like, elegant way to do it and a very clever kind of team-building way to handle initiative.
Mm.
One of the other things from earlier editions was, okay, we roll those D6s. Let's say I get, you know, our side, we're the players. We get a 6. They get a 2. We decide if we want to go first. Because it could, especially when you're thinking of more of that wargaming style, it could benefit us greatly.
To have everybody run in at you, so you swarm them, right?
Exactly, to not be first.
Yeah.
But yes, so City of Mist is based loosely on Powered by the Apocalypse, which as someone who has ran that style of game before, it is the most difficult thing to keep telling myself, I don't roll.
There's no initiative. You don't roll.
Right? Like, I'm not rolling. Yeah. You're telling me I'm saying things, and then based on the things that we're saying, you, the player, will roll to defend, potentially, from what I have done. but I will never actually roll anything for the most part. So yeah, I could see that as not rolling.
Mm.
I'm going to mention the third option in the DMG, which I think is, and I rarely say this because I'm a fairly positive individual, this is some hot garbage and I would never.
Oh, whoa, what is it?
So this is the speed factor option, where basically we're all going to go ahead and like basically say what we're going to do. And based off of that, we're going to get a specific initiative modifier based on the thing that we're doing. So if I'm spell casting, I'm going to take a negative based on this level of spell that I am casting.
Whoa.
If I'm using a heavy weapon, I will get a
there
minus
are rules
two.
For that in 5e?
In the DMG, I'm staring at D&D Beyond right
Yikes.
Now. Based on my size, I will either go slower or faster from a plus 5 at tiny to a minus 8 at gargantuan.
Yikes. So fussy.
From what I can also gain, and there's a lot here, so I may be misinterpreting it. Dear internet, please be okay. Basically, we're all going to decide what we're going to do. We're going to receive the modifier based on that assumption. We're all going to roll. We're not going to talk about it. And then I'm going to, as the DM, let's say, I'm going to start at 30, 25, and then you're going to take your turn, and then I'll get back to my numbers. And then we'll do it again next round.
Oh, wow.
That seems like a nightmare. Classic one of those rules that just like puts so much burden on the GM.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
That doesn't need to be there, right?
This table is only a starting point. You can refer to it when adjudicating. First off, the fact that you made me say adjudicating, not great.
Is already too much work. Yeah.
Any actions a character takes that you think should be faster or slower. Quick, easy actions should grant a bonus, while slow, difficult ones should incur a penalty. Let's say your fighter wants to use a portcullis, but that seems like it's a complicated task. Maybe they're going to get a negative 5. My whole thing the whole time was, what if the thing I want to do I can't do anymore?
Yeah. That just also seems like a real open to abuse, right? Because it's just one person like arbitrating yeah. mm-hmm. what is happening. So I think that's frustrating in like a game, you know, a rules heavy game like D&D. That would be really frustrating.
Yeah. When I hear rules like this, as well as the earlier edition rules, I understand why D&D didn't really catch on as much in the mainstream. Because that's a lot of hoops to jump through to get to like the fun, the stuff that is the most fun probably for most people, which is like the story and the results of it all.
Anything that demands you add and have lots of specific knowledge. So whether it's, you know, knowing that this weapon is slow versus this one is heavy versus, oh, cavalry goes first because in war they went before the foot. Like anything that does that is just one more barrier to play for new people and is just going to make your game less approachable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And part of it is like, you know, I want... A person could want that sense of air quote reality or a realism. Sense of a touch point. Let's refer to it as a touch point of reality.
All
because
right.
there's dragons and stuff. But the idea that even for me trying to fill those shoes and really get into that mindset, that only works for the first round.
Yeah.
Because everything after that, it's just combat and it's been an indeterminate amount of time and things are happening. But yes, I can agree with the concept that, yeah, I can fire off this crossbow way faster than the guy with a greatsword trying to get that to work.
Mm-hmm.
Totally understand. Or the wizard casting that first spell. But after that happens, who's to say what is going to happen after that?
And the thing is, too, like, you know, folks who think in 5e, like, ooh, initiative isn't representative enough of, like, real what happens, you know, starting a battle. Like, I want more of that realism. That's what, like, the surprised, well, it's not a condition in 5e. It isn't Tales of Valiant. But that's, like, what surprise and surprise rounds are supposed to be for.
Mm-hmm.
But 5e didn't do a great job explaining how to use them, and people just don't use them. So now it's, like, this rule that sort of covered that bridge.
I used it out of spite, but continue.
Yeah, a lot of people, it's very hard to understand what's happening, because hiding is extremely hard to understand in 5e, so people, like, the idea of sneaking up on someone, everybody wants to do it, but when you try to actually explain how it works in the rules, like, people wilt, and become very sad, and understandably, because it is extremely complicated to hit in and cross three books and five different pages.
Especially going off of this conversation, is like the only true benefit is not only did you successfully manage it, but you also rolled really well, or you lose what you successfully managed almost immediately.
Right. So it's like, meh. So if we did have something like a working surprise model, I feel like people would feel better about like kind of the realism or like the strategy of going into combat in that first round. But I totally agree with you. Like after that first round, right, strategy is should be minimal, as opposed to like you're in the battle now, right? It should feel fast. It's all happening at once and being very chaotic.
So there is a, at this point, I guess, infamous, maybe famous video that is a law enforcement training video called Surviving Edged Weapons. And in that video, it is used as training for police officers, or at least it used to be. And as part of it, they use actual real life cases of officers who came into conflict against people who were wielding edged weapons of a variety of types.
I'm going to say 21 feet, continue.
One of the things that comes up is even if you have a gun and the other person has a sword or just a knife, you, depending on how far they are, and you can be like 30 plus feet away, you might not even get a shot off. If their initiative, quote unquote, which is they start charging you before you manage to have your gun out and aimed, you probably won't get your gun out and aimed before you're already being attacked, like stabbed. And I feel like the same is like that would be the realistic part of initiative, because sure. Yeah. We can say
of surprised round too.
Yeah.
Also like, whoa. Yeah.
Exactly. And so we can say, sure. The advantage of a ranged weapon is that you can hit the other guy before they can get to you. Absolutely. But if they manage to get the drop on you, or if it's just you're not quick enough in terms of getting your thing loaded and aimed before they're on top of you, sorry. And that would be where initiative comes in. So I do, as much as like war games may be like, well, we're trying to be more realistic, I would argue that there is a realism to the initiative system as well, because sometimes somebody's reaction speed is just quicker.
Yep.
Yeah. It's 21 feet for California law enforcement. And like I've done martial arts training with people that are in there, and yeah, I've seen some things about some people that didn't follow the rule and had a very, very bad day. Okay, I've got two more, and I think I've got one that is probably as absurd as the last one, but I like it, and I wouldn't say as many bad things as I did previously. And then I have one question that I will pose, and that I think that'll round us out. So what is action points? Where I'm going to roll initiative, and my initiative score is the number of action points that I am allotted for this round, which is an interesting way that can force the hand to really like potentially make combat more interesting, because I need to make better, different decisions based on how many points I then have to spend. So let's say I roll a 20, then it could be possible that I can do more things or more interesting things because I've rolled so high. I think it would take so much time at table to really figure it out, to make it work well. Work with 5e and those numbers feel right and it not feel like someone is abusing it and things of that nature. I'm interested enough to say it's something I could potentially try, but I think it would be really difficult.
They do use it with a lot of like the D20, like modern systems uses that, or D20 future also. I think they do like an action point based system. So at least it's a D20 thing. So it might not be that hard to graft on. But yeah, action economy is pretty sacred in 5e, but it's interesting for sure.
I feel like having to like use a new role for it might make it again like a little overly complicated. But if you have like the idea that, okay, because your dexterity is this, you can just make quicker moves. And you have a certain number of action points, or maybe if your constitution is higher, you have more endurance, so you have more action points. Like, I feel like there could be something there for sure. I don't know if I would want it to be dexed based, dex based for this game, just because, like I said, constitution, like your physical endurance is a factor, or how physically strong you are can also be a factor. But for a game with a slightly more simple, I guess, ability system, then I feel like action points would actually make potentially a lot of sense.
I like it. Okay. Now, this is my final question. This will round us out. If you could implement something special to happen with a natural 20 or a natural 1 on initiative, because that's not in there, and man, people want it so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, when they roll that 20 on initiative and they're just like, what do you mean I don't get anything? I'm like, that's what I mean, because like that's the way it is. What is something either you have implemented or would love to implement based on either a 20 or a 1 on the die when rolling for initiative?
So I've played in some campaigns where if you rolled a natural 20, then you automatically went first. And I had, I think on in the campaign I'm really thinking of, I had a +9 to initiative and I almost never rolled a natural 20. So what would usually happen is I would roll the highest and then somebody else would get a natural, like I'd have the overall highest score.
That's really a bummer.
Yeah, I'd have like a 17 +9 and somebody else with like a +2 to initiative rolls a natural 20 and their 22 beats my 26. And I'm like, well, okay, great. Like it just kind of sucks for me. So I don't really like that rule, but I could see like, oh, on your first turn, maybe you have advantage on something or you have like a bonus to something. Or if you roll a,
that's nice.
Yeah, if you roll a natural 1, not that you lose a turn, because if you lose a turn in D&D.
Oh, that's really punishing.
Yeah, that's brutal. Like both mechanically
maybe something
and practically.
Like, yeah, like you could double your movement or something. Like,
yeah.
You know, like if you got a 20, double your movement or one, your speed is halved. That might be like not too punishing, but feels thematic.
Like momentum in Baldur's Gate 3. Let me see what they did with momentum. Because it's pretty much in the, let's see, it says spurred on by a sense of urgency. Your movement speed increases by 5 feet per remaining duration of this effect. So that's just a boost to your movement. Or it could be like you get a D4 to something. Like, yeah, I think that could be something. And then, like, you lose some speed or something.
Yeah, and I really like something that, yeah, now I like that answer more than my own answer. I'm not a big fan of what just happened in my brain right now. Dang it. Because I really like the idea of something that is smaller but lasts for the entirety of the fight. I really like the idea of momentum to say you rolled a natural 20. Here's 5 or 10 feet that you have for this combo.
Each round, yeah.
Or here's the bless. So you have the D4. One of the things that I have implemented before is on that first round, I'll give you for the nat 20, I'll give you an extra action. And so then just for that one round, because you were so quick on the draw, basically, you're allowed an extra action for that round. Subsequently, removing bonus and potentially reaction from the person that got a one, because then it's like, okay, whoa, I... You know, I'm out of sorts. I'm still able to make my movement. I'm still able to take my action. But if someone were to run past me, I would not be prepared for that. So I cannot react and potentially take away that bonus action. And again, only for that first round to negatively impact the one. But again, the action, giving an additional action, which, like I said, I like far less than momentum or bless or something like that. So ones and 20s. Yeah, but the second I do it, then everyone's just going to be just rolling ones and 20s constantly. So I'm also hesitant to implement either one of them.
So this is, I've actually thought about this before, like a mechanic I've been playing with to figure out if I can do this for like a rogue subclass or something, because I think this would be really cool. It's sort of adjacent to that. But if you roll a natural 20, you get to switch any two creatures' initiative.
Oh, wow.
So that means if you, obviously, you could make yourself go first. If there was like a bigger bad, you would switch places with that bigger bad, right? Or maybe there's an ally who rolled terribly and you want to switch them up with a monster, right? You need your paladin to go sooner in the order. So like you would get to switch that initiative, right? That's a call you get to make.
Okay, I love this for this, and I really love this to add as something I would let my players do with their inspiration tokens.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, so this is something I was thinking about as, like, if you do have, like, say, like, a strategist kind of subclass for anything, like, what a great ability. Like, it's something you could do, you could burn some kind of resource, or it could be on that natural 20 to be able to do that. So you're kind of strategizing the flow of combat. Alternatively, though, if we're like looking at tying it to a 20 or a 1, if you get a 1, the DM gets to switch.
Yeah, that's
any two creatures, right? And it could be you, or it's costing somebody else, like your friend, right? You stumbled and fell, and maybe your ally now is having to deal with the consequences of that, right? And their initiative gets switched. Or it's just like boosting up a monster somewhere, right? Like
it's the cleric, and you put him at the bottom,
right? Yeah. You know, like
you just murk the fighter.
So that would be my proposal.
I have like an alternate version of that, which is I once ran like a red wall. Well, not once, but one of the times that I ran like a red wall themed D&D campaign. Once somebody was playing a meerkat, and we basically homebrewed races for any of the races that did not have any of the animals that did not have clear parallels already existing in D&D. So one of his abilities was, because meerkats societally, a lot of their society is like, we have lookouts and they will warn each other. He could give a bonus to everybody else's initiative. I forget what it was equal to, but he could basically add, like, I think it was like his proficiency bonus. He could just give everybody his proficiency bonus.
That's nice. Like bumping up all the allies while the monsters stay static.
So I wonder if for that mastermind rogue type or something that's like the strategist, you could, I wonder, like, you either subtract your proficiency bonus from all of the monsters, or you add your proficiency bonus to one or more allies, like maybe a number of allies equal to your proficiency bonus. And it, on a natural 20, that doubles.
Yeah. Or on a natural 20, you could let them reroll. You could choose an ally to reroll initiative, or force a monster to reroll it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So like there's still the possibility, right? There's still that swing.
Yeah.
And then maybe you get to the reroll with that proficiency bonus, right? That might be like an elegant way to, you know, not do math for every monster, but like have it really count, right? On one ally or one monster.
Yeah. I'm wary of the swap one, because I'm like, if you got a low dex person, then you basically, like, it now becomes a strategy to have a low dex person on your party, and then you could just cheese the monster, and it's like, man.
But that's the fun of it. Like, that's sometimes chance, sometimes everything works in your favor, and sometimes it just all goes to hell so fast, and it's out of your control, so I feel like that kind of, that swingy nature might be super fun.
Well, I think the other big takeaway is like not being as careful with your bonuses. I think one of the other things is like, okay, so I'm going to surprise, let's say my players do a good job. They surprise the monster. Why do I get an initiative bonus then? I shouldn't have it. So then I could take that away. So it's a straight roll, and maybe I do well. Maybe I don't, though. I don't have the benefit of that bonus. In the same way that maybe they prepare and do a really good job, and on their surprise round, I double their initiative bonuses, or let them add their proficiency, or, you know, I think that's a whole conversation we're having, is there are way more interesting things you can do with initiative. Find out what works.
Yeah, play with
it. Okay. And my best question is, where can people go on this world wide web and find all the awesome things that both of you are doing?
Should we keep the same?
You won that initiative.
All right. Yeah.
So. No, we got to reroll.
We're rerolling. Okay. Let's reroll. Should we use one of the alternate methods and instead use our base initiatives to just assign our base dexterity?
Okay. Scores? Well, I am a strength based boy in real life, so I'm probably like a hot 10 if I were to assign.
The maximum I could ever give myself on dexterity is an 8. I am dexterity challenged.
Yeah. I feel like Neil, you actually like work out, so I
literally burned like 2,000 calories right before we got here. So I'm 100% gonna go first. It is what it is.
Yep.
Yeah. So one of the things that I almost never promote on here, but I feel like this is a golden opportunity. If you are a fan of the cartoon Young Justice, I am the producer, editor, which I'm going to share something that has bothered me for many years. I found out that the industry standard for a person who is both a producer and an editor, industry standard is to refer to them as a predator. And I don't.
What?
No.
No,
red light on that.
The
no
first
way.
Time I saw it was, that's weird. What a weird choice that this individual would make. Huh. The second time I saw it, I thought, no. Mm-mm. When I got to just the fifth time I saw it, I said, wow, mm-mm. We all collectively were okay with this and have pushed it. So I will never refer to myself as that. I just wanted to let you people know that that is what it is. So I produce and edit a show called Whelmed, the Young Justice Files, where it is just a retrospective of that amazing show. It is one of the most well-written cartoons that has ever been written. We have some of the voice actors on. We have some of the producers, storyboard artists, just anybody that's behind the show often we'll have discussions, and then we have really deep dives on the individual episodes, what we can learn from it in the creative writing process. And so, yeah, Whelmed, the Young Justice Files.
Nice.
Cool. Well, I also do a podcast where I produce and edit and game master. So what is that combination? I don't want to know.
The Predator Master.
Predator Master. Welcome. Yikes. No, thank you. So hi again, my name is Celeste Conowich. If you want to hear me putting this all into practice, my set initiative scores, check out Venture Maidens. It's a D&D 5th edition / Tales of the Valiant actual play live stream that also converts to a podcast. So whether you like watching people, you know, live or later on YouTube or listening with your ears, check out Venture Maidens there. I am also the senior game designer at Kobold Press. So I spend a lot of time putting these ideas, throwing them at sticky walls in playtests and, you know, games there. So, yeah, check out Kobold Press. Check out some of our products. Get involved if you like going to conventions. We're going to a few new ones this year, but we're definitely going to be at Gen Con. And like I said, Tales of the Valiant, brand new system that we're launching. It's going to be publicly available for purchase in, like, end of March, May-ish in there. So get involved if you want to playtest some new stuff. Join our Discord server. We're always looking for, you know, playtesters for our new biz, maybe even new initiative models. Who knows? We'd love to see you there.
And that means me. I am Jeremy Cobb. I don't know why I felt the need to say my name again, but that's my name.
It's a good reminder. It's been a long episode.
Yeah, in case you forgot, whether from looking at the description or hearing me say it, hi, I'm Jeremy Cobb. There it is again. You can find me in a variety of places. I'm probably most well-known for being on the show Three Black Halflings. So if you want to become a Blockling, a fan of both DM Block and Three Black Halflings, which is sort of a variety show where we talk about a variety of topics. We have talk show episodes where we do interviews. We discuss different issues facing the TTRPG and nerd spheres, or actual play where I'm the resident GM for the show. We've run all sorts of fun campaigns. And we've, in fact, speaking of Redwall, we're going to be running a Redwall campaign pretty soon. Yeah, nice. Not using D&D, though. We're going to be using a different system that is currently undecided. But yeah, if you want to come check out our DM Block, I mean, check out DM Block. You're already doing that. But if you want to check out Three Black Halflings,
keep it up.
Yeah, keep doing that. But if you want to check out Three Black Halflings, you can find us wherever pods are cast. And go check out the Three Black Halflings Patreon while you're at it, because the patrons will get to help decide certain things about the Redwall series. In fact, they're the ones who chose Redwall as the next setting for our series.
So good.
Yeah. So hop on the Three Black Halflings Patreon and get to hear all sorts of bonus episodes, behind the scenes stuff, and help decide things about the show. If you want to just follow me specifically, you can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Jeremy Cobb 1. That is Cobb with 2 B's and the number 1. You can also follow me on Instagram at The Cobb Meister. And if you enjoy streaming games, come watch me do that. Twitch.tv/CasualQuestLive, where I am a person who is absolutely not a gamer, but who is trying to become one and playing various classic games for the first time. We've done Fallout New Vegas, Deus Ex Human Revolution, Metal Gear Solid. We're going to be doing the rest of the Metal Gear series. I'm still doing Baldur's Gate 3, both single and co-op mode. And I recently just started Disco Elysium, live streaming Disco Elysium as well. So come check out twitch.tv/CasualQuestLive. It's a lot of fun. And that's it for me.
And just like any good comedian, Neil will bring up a callback. It took us an hour long, but the answer was there the whole time. It's how we got Celeste's name, because he is none other than Jeremy, a.k.a. DM Cobbmeister.
Hey!
We did it, full circle, baby.
Take inspiration, Neil. You can use it on your next initiative roll.
Oh, even better.
Switch someone's role. Mix it up.
We're done and done.
All right. Nailed it.
You are absolute treasures, the both of you. We just want to thank Celeste and Jeremy for coming on, spending some time, talking about ways they've iterated on initiative. ideas to throw into your campaign. And honestly, I stand by what I said. I think it is one of the easiest mechanics in the game to just wholesale do differently and impact things very little. So yeah, try some new ways. Maybe you play Rochambeau. Maybe you play Shortest Stick. Who knows? But if you want to tell us about the ways that you've been changing initiative in your games, you can always email us at dungeonmasterblock@gmail.com. There's no S in there. It is super confusing, and one of the reasons why I assume we get less emails than I think we should. And of course, if you head over to Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice, leave a rating and review. Word on the street is it is always and forever helpful. And of course, you can go to Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, Hive, kinda. Go somewhere. Go out. Maybe go out to your local game store. Maybe one of us is there. Highly unlikely, but the chances are always greater than zero. And of course, we are always a proud member of the Block Party Podcast Network, where you can check out other shows like The GM Showcase, How Not to DM, Detentions and Dragons, Dungeons and Dragons and Daughters, and more. But as always, thank you for listening to the Dungeon Master's Block, the place where we come to talk about the Dungeon Master, the most important person in the game, the only person capable of playing God, killing character, playing gods, killing characters, and lowering the egos of everyone else at the table. I'm DM Neil. Good night, good luck, and keep on Dungeon Mastering.
It's not inspiration, it's not wisdom, and it's bad advice.
We should just play spoons. Just a violent, violent game of snatching things. Hungry, hungry hippos. Whoever has the most. Dominoes. Literally any board game. Determining initiative. It'll be fine. Monopoly. That's it. That'll be fun.
Goodbye.